Roscoe dancing, Roscoe dancing. Roscoe dancing, Roscoe dancing,
Roscoe dancing, dream again.
Roscoe dancing, Roscoe dancing,
dancing,
Roscoe, 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 Roscoe dancing.
Ohayou gozaimasu. Watashi wa Darius desu here.
My name is Jake, and this is the Ohayou Sumo Podcast, and yeah, we're here at our, we don't really have a headquarters, but we're here at my house in Kentucky. Darius came down from Cincinnati, where we kind of based the club out of, and yeah, we're here to talk sumo. This is brand new. We're just launching our first, our first episode of the podcast. As everybody knows, obviously we're in this time of craziness and coronavirus and riots and protests, and we're just kind of sitting back and hoping for the best on all fronts. But in the meantime, we're trying to keep the sumo fires burning, as it were. What have you been up to, Darius? Keeping busy.
Man, just been working a lot, been doing a lot of the basics, shiko, matawari, suriyashi, just trying to stay in a somewhat sumo form, I guess, without having the face-to-face combat.
Yeah, right, yeah, so. Yeah, the face-to-face. Yeah, and I've kind of let myself go, to be honest. I'm very, I haven't really kept up as much as I would have hoped to during this time. But the good news is we're kind of coming out of the lockdown phase of this, and we're actually going to be getting together in a couple weeks, two Saturdays from today,
June 20th.
June the 20th, Ohayou Sumo will be back wrestling, and you know, we're going to continue to take precautions and try to be safe through this time, but we're going to start getting back into it. I noticed that our friends at Dark Circle Sumo just had their first Keiko last week.
Yeah.
And I talked to Justin.
San Antonio.
Yeah, I talked to Justin, and he said, I said, well, what did you hope to do there? And he was like, well, we're just doing it. It's like, we're tired of, you know, because I was asking him like what precautions they're taking and stuff like that, and I'm just trying to get a handle on what we should do. But anyway,
they've done a very nice job as well. They were doing what was it, Zoom practices and stuff.
Yeah, they were doing Zoom practices, and really, I mean, you know,
just getting creative with it, trying to stay in contact with their members, which is really awesome. That was the only club I really saw doing that.
Yeah, yeah. We certainly did not do that. We dropped the ball. Justin, as always, Justin outdoes himself and everyone else. but at any rate, so we're looking to come back. We're gonna be back. I think we're gonna have like seven guys at the practice. And I know our buddies, the Biggs brothers in Evansville, Indiana, are planning on coming up as well to practice. And speaking of the Biggs brothers, let's just jump right into our first topic, which is the Nationals recap. So we went to Nationals as a club. Yeah. How many guys did we have, Darius?
We had four guys with us. It was me, Jake. We have a guy named Wes Bjornson, and Tony Desmuse.
Dismukes, I think is how you say it. Yeah. yeah, it was great. We had two lightweights, two heavyweights. We were hoping to have a middleweight. We had a guy, Clay Wade, former Louisville rugby player, who hurt his foot like right before we were supposed to go, and had to bow out. Otherwise, we would have also had a middleweight. But we were...
And we would have had Cameron, too.
Oh, yeah, Cameron, too.
He got called in to do some Army stuff, right?
Yep, yep. You know? So he's in the military, and so he got called in. But, yeah, we would have had, you know, a pretty decent showing. But as it was, we had a good, you know, we had a good time. So let's recap, Darius. How was your... We get to Philadelphia. It was a little crazy. There was a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. It was an interesting one. So the day before, we have our nationals meeting where all of the United States Sumo Federation members get together. And this year happened to be a voting year. So we were voting for two new trustees and then our officer positions. So it was a pretty big deal. How did you feel about that?
It was good to see things kind of in action. There was a lot of tense moments, you know, people, you know, it's really the time for people to kind of air their
grievances
and talk things out. And there was a couple tense moments, but I think overall, the board of you know, of people there and everybody kept things on track and tried to do their best to field all the questions, and I thought it was really great. From that we got a new we have a new president, Ed, from New Jersey. He's with the what's the name of their club? Is it just
Mountain Martial Arts?
Mountain Martial Arts.
Yeah.
And Ed is really great. We were really excited that he got the position, and I think he's going to do really, you know, great things. Unfortunately, he has become our president in a time where there's no sumo happening because of the virus, but I think his leadership is really has already shown itself, and he's really trying to do a lot to highlight, you know, clubs and whatnot, which we'll get into more of that later. But
And I mean, we also got other new officers in as well. We had Mariah Holmes. She became the vice president,
yeah,
as well as one of the trustees.
Yeah.
And then
talk about her street cred. She's like a decorated.
She's like one of the baddest things walking.
Yeah.
When it comes to the female sumo wrestlers here in the U.S. I mean, she handles her business in the ring, and I've seen her wrestle with the guys and really hold her own. So I mean, she's one of the top ones right there.
Yeah, really, really great to see her compete, and you know, she was not competing in this tournament because I think she was with child, was she not? I think that's true. that was what I was told. If it's not true, then I apologize, but that's what I was told. At any rate, how was the tournament portion of the whole thing?
So we started out, we had a new mat surface, that was different from previous. It was a prototype that, Bill Gossett had brought forth, I believe, him and Helen. So that was a...
kind of a curveball for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it was just something different and new. So I think the Board of Trustees had a vote on it, and but that's what we ended up wrestling on. And I mean, I think it went pretty all right.
Yeah,
for the most part.
I didn't notice as much of a difference wrestling on it. You know, it was a new mat, so it had an element of slickness to it that, you know, was definitely there. But I think as people wrestled on it and sweated on it and stuff, it started to, you know, be a little more comfortable. But I didn't notice a lot of people were talking about the differences in it. I didn't notice it as bad, and it might just be that I'm, you know, I just don't have the experience on the plastic mats like that. But at any rate, I didn't notice, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it felt different to me, but I think that could have also just been, it's a brand new mat, you know. The mats that we wrestle on in the U.S., we usually don't have a lot of clay dohyos, So a lot of us use a portable canvas mat. And there's only a couple of those in the U.S. They're pretty expensive, a couple thousand dollars at least. So a lot of those are well worn in. So it might have just been that it was a brand new mat. But I think the tournament went off pretty well even with that, you know.
There was a little bit of a confusion. Like, there was some time constraints that caused the last portion of the tournament to kind of be sped through, which I think kind of, on the one hand, it kind of threw a curveball at the wrestlers, but on the other hand, it also kind of made you, it was also kind of good in a way. Like, as a competitor, it was sort of like, it just forced you to, like, kind of get in there and, like, take care, like, try to do what you were going to do and not think too hard about what it is you were about to do.
Yeah, you couldn't really get, you didn't have time to get the jitters.
Yeah, you didn't have time to get the jitters because, you know, it was, I thought it went off well. How did our guys do, Darius?
So our lightweights, Jake and Tony, I think it was a good experience for you guys.
Yeah.
I think you got a win.
I got one win. I lost to, my first match was against Gabe, the former bronze medalist in lightweight, former national bronze medalist in lightweight. He pretty handily took care of me. I was happy with my tachi-ai against Gabe, and I was happy with the way that I approached the match compared to the last time I faced him, which was in Georgia, in just kind of a sparring match. But this is the first time I've faced him in a competitive match, and I was happy with how the match went. I wish I'd have done some different things on the edge when he kind of, I wish I'd have, you know, turned with him. But at any rate, he beat me, and then I picked up a win against kind of an older a guy that kind of comes from like a jiu-jitsu background that I beat. And then I lost to one of the California guys, one of Andrew's guys, who was much taller than me, and I should have stayed lower than him, but he ended up upending me, and once I was upright, I really couldn't do much. So I went 1-2, and then in the lightweight, I lost all of my matches in the open weight as well. But
yeah, and Tony, did he get any wins?
Tony did not. He went 0-2.
But that was his first official
tournament. And
so yeah.
And Tony, I was a little bit surprised that Tony, They managed to get him out quicker than I thought they would, and I think he kind of had the jitters a little bit.
I think he was nervous about having his first tournament. He has 20-30 years experience in jiu-jitsu, and he's an instructor down in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah, and a really great grappler. Every time I face him, it's like, you know, to the wire, you know. So
yeah, so I was a bit surprised by that, but it was his first tournament, and you know, going into nationals is a whole different ballpark than you know, our practices. So I think it gave him a new perspective on it, you know.
Yeah.
I think he even said that coming out of it, you know.
Yeah.
So then
moving to heavyweights.
Moving to the heavyweights. So Wes was our new guy. And this was his first tournament as well. And I think he'd only been out to two practices or three practices before that, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was very fresh, but he did very well. He's a professional arm wrestler, so he has a great deal of strength.
Yeah, I think it kind of helped him going into the tournament because he already had a mind for tournaments. You know, he had a mind of like, okay, this is how I get into my head. You know, he knew how to prepare and just kind of be, you know, he was ready for it. I didn't sense a lot of jitters.
Mean, it's for most of us in America, at least, this is just a hobby, you know. So Wes coming from a pro sporting background, being a pro arm wrestler, and you know that's what he does for a living. I think he brought that mentality into sumo, and I think he did very well. What did he placed like fourth?
I think he placed fourth, and yeah, he was just shy of a bronze medal, which would have been great. I mean, that would have been, you know.
And he had a very close match against Jose, the silver medalist,
yeah,
in heavyweight. So yep. I mean, he had a very, very good showing.
Yeah, him. Yeah, and really, you know, Wes is a big guy. Wes is a big guy, but I think he possesses, you know. It's not just about being big. Obviously, like I think he was the heaviest guy in heavyweight, but he finished fourth. So it's not always about being heavy, but you know, Wes also, just in the short time that he's been at it, you know, was able to really show that he's got some techniques as well, which I thought was cool. We keep comparing him to Konishiki, because he's got that similar build, and he's just a big, powerful guy. So
yeah, I mean, he's 6'4", about 500 pounds.
Yeah.
So he's a very big guy.
Yeah.
And he brings a lot of power into the ring.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing, and I think he did an excellent job in the tournament. I think he might have expected a little bit more, but
sure.
But I think he did very, very well. And then me, I kind of came into it, so about a month before Nationals, at one of our, we had a inter-club practice with the Biggs brothers from Evansville and then the Appalachian Sumo Club that's based out of Morgantown, West Virginia. So we had a little joint practice with those guys in Lexington, and in a match, I ended up pretty badly spraining my ankle.
Against Wes,
yeah. Kind of just got caught at the edge and landed on it, and then he landed on me. So it was a lot, but so.
And we all cried because we knew it wasn't going to be good. And the doctor even told Darius that he cleared him to like basically do stuff on his ankle like the day before the tournament. So I mean, he was like really fresh off of the injury.
Yeah, I was doing PT, a lot of physical therapy as well, trying to just get into a shape where I could at least compete. So with that
said...
Could you
feel it when you were wrestling at the tournament? I mean, could you...
Yeah, it was... especially in my match against Nick.
Yeah.
I ended up kind of getting on my ankle and just slid out. And then against Jordan, he caught me on that ankle coming back, and I just didn't have anything to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's no excuses in sumo. Everyone's a little banged up sometimes. So,
yeah.
But I went 2-2, got 2 wins, 2 losses. So I broke even at least.
Yeah. I think overall we did our best, and you know, I was happy with. You know, I was happy with how it went. I think we can do better the next time. And who was your favorite guys to watch other, you know, during the tournament?
Well, man, Ed and Cornelius, those were the matches, I think, of this Nationals. And I think when people think back on this Nationals, those are the matches they'll remember.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Ed is just one of the best wrestlers, I think, in the States right now, and Cornelius, he was the lightweight champion last year and moved up to middleweight this year, so he's in a new weight class, and he still pushed Ed to a tiebreaker. They ended up going 3 bouts for the medals, and just so happened that Ed, you know, got a good throw on him at the edge.
Yep. It was like watching two, you know, gladiators just like go at it, and they really, you know, it really put on a, they really put on a show, and they gave it every ounce. You know, it was impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you saw Ed when he came up, he was beat red, man.
Beat red. Yeah, and then he went off and cried.
Yeah, you know, so this year's Worlds is supposed to be in Poland,
yeah,
and he comes from a Polish ancestry,
yeah,
so it meant a lot to him to make it to this world. So getting into, so winning the gold and being able to represent the U.S. In Poland, I think, was a really big thing to him. So,
yeah.
It was really important to him, and he did a very good job.
Yeah. Watching, I love the drama of sports. This is probably my favorite part of sports of any kind. And, you know, just seeing him get emotional and, like, kind of have to go off and have that moment, you know, and his wife being there and, like, you know, embracing him. Like, those are the moments that you know, it's so much bigger than sumo. Just, like, you know, sumo is kind of the vehicle, but, like, you know, there's all this other stuff that goes into it, and it's, like, your family, and it's, you know, your friends, and, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that, like, you carry with you into the ring, you know. So I think that's all, it's just the drama of, you know, the drama of the sport is really great.
Yeah, and our guys, our friends over at Dark Circle, to bring them up again, they won 3 gold medals. So they were pretty incredible out there. They did some great work. Their head coach, Justin.
Oh, yeah.
He ended up getting gold in men's lightweight. He had silver last year, and he was gold the year before. So he's been a top guy in the lightweight division for a while now.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had just moved out to San Antonio and started that club earlier this year, didn't he?
Austin. Yeah,
Austin. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, it was. And then he has a female heavyweight, Eros, and she did very well. She won gold.
Yeah, incredible. Like she's she's terrifying in the ring. Like, you know, when you see her wrestle, I mean, she's just, you know, intense. She's got her game face on.
And I think she comes from a powerlifting background, mm-hmm. so she's very, very strong.
Oh, yeah.
Then
yeah.
He has a light heavyweight who has I think he was a collegiate shot putter.
Yeah.
So he was very strong, and he ended up winning gold as well. So, I mean, for club's debut to get 3 gold.
Yeah, just it was, and you could tell Justin was just proud as, you know, I mean, he looked like a parent, you know, who had just watched his kids, you know. It was really cool to watch. Appalachian Sumo Club, they brought quite a few people.
I think they had 5 or 6 guys.
Yeah, there, yeah. I think next to the California crew, they were the biggest represented there. They, you know, they did good. They put up some good numbers, and I don't think anybody got any medals from Appalachian, but
But this was their first.
Their first time.
Yeah, so that was it was just great seeing how many guys they were able to bring out. You know, in a sport where, you know, having 10 guys in your club is a really big deal.
That's really,
you know,
yeah.
Bringing out six some guys, you know, is a great showing. You know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, well, it was a great time and you know, great memories. We had a little. Our friend Cornelius, we had a little birthday bash for him, which was fun, and he was pretty touched by it. It was nice to see everybody showing some love for Cornelius, and he does so much for the sport, and we're gonna hopefully have him on the show at some point and interview him and talk sumo with Cornbread.
Cornbread.
So. All right, well, we're gonna move into our next segment here on the origins of Ohio sumo, our main topic. Darius and I are going to talk about how we each got into the sport, how we founded the club, and what our hopes and dreams of are for the future. So stay tuned. All right, so moving along into the next segment, we're going to talk about our origins in sumo, Darius and I, where we, how we got into sumo, what inspired us to get into sumo, and what inspired us to start a sumo club. Who should go first?
Well, you've been in it longer, technically.
So my sumo journey kind of began probably in the late 90s. I've been trying to figure out when exactly it probably happened, and I'd say probably the late 90s, like 99 or 2000. At that time, ESPN would actually do sumo highlights. And I was at my grandparents, and they had ESPN, and so I got to see sumo, and I just remember seeing it, loving it, watching it, and being like, this is so cool. But at that time, you know, internet not being what it is today, and you know, really there being no way for me as just a kid to really follow the sport, I ended up forgetting about it. And then years later, I ended up seeing a commercial, some kind of a commercial that had like sumo wrestlers in the commercial. And I was like, oh, I remember liking that. And so I got on the internet and like looked up sumo and pretty much fell down the rabbit hole. And I was, you know, trying to find anything I could find. And then November of 2009, I followed my first kind of what I considered like followed the whole tournament. Hakuho won the Yusho, I believe, against Asashoru. I think Asashoru went like 11-4 in that tournament. But anyway, I was hooked and watched the highlights, what I could of the highlights on YouTube. There wasn't really a lot at that time. Jason's channel was really the only option, unless you wanted to stay up and watch the little the little pixelated live feed from Japan on the Goo Sumo website. Other than that, you know, you were kind of up a creek in terms of seeing the coverage. And even Jason's channel only showed like the top guys, the Sanyaku guys, and maybe one of the lower guys. If he was having a good tournament, he would feature him. But usually it was just the top guys. And luckily, my favorite guy was a top guy, Haruma Fuji. So I got to see him, and follow his career until the end. So, that's kind of how I got into it. I started a club shortly after I got into sumo, and that started with just a friend of mine. We started wrestling in the park, and that grew into a club of about four or five people. We called our first club. It was called the Katashi Sumo. I called it the Katashi Sumo Stable, which Katashi means like firm or hard. And so I thought like, okay, like firm, hard, Katashi Sumo. So that was our first club. We would wrestle in the park, and like all the redneck kids in their trucks would drive by and like yell at us out the window, like make fun of us. it was pretty great, but we would wrestle, we would have our practices, and then every tournament, every like month that there was a tournament in Japan, we would have our own tournament, little inner club tournament. And so that's what we did. I didn't know anything about, you know, US sumo or anything outside until right around the time that our club was kind of in its decline, and I moved away and stopped sumo wrestling. But I always stayed a fan, and always hoped for that time. You know, if there was ever anybody that wanted to wrestle, I was always down for doing it, but I just figured that, you know, there wasn't anybody in my area. So, So now, Darius, how did you...
Yeah, so, I mean, I've always been sort of a Japanophile. Liked anything Japan. I think it started... I used to play a computer game, Total War Shogun, which covers the Sengoku period in Japan, the nation of the country of war. You know, so I've always that's kind of what got me into to Japanese culture, and of course anime. You know, just in my generation, it's just pretty mainstream. So I ended up was on Crunchyroll. An anime streaming service back in April of 2014, I believe, and they had an anime out called Rowdy Sumo Wrestler Matsutoro. It's a little stupid anime, about this guy who's just like a juvenile delinquent, but he's just super strong. So the only job he can find is basically becoming a sumo wrestler.
Yeah.
So he's basically doing everything wrong. He's beating up people and, you know, just he just doesn't care at all. But they were using terms that I didn't really know at the time, you know, Yokozuna, Ozeki, Rikishi, stables. I mean, I didn't know anything about sumo except for, you know, the Western stereotype about two big fat guys just charging at each other. So me, always wanting to understand more, I ended up started researching into sumo, and I ended up watching the May 2014 tournament, Kakeru's first tournament on YouTube on Jason's All Sumo channel.
Yeah,
that was the first tournament I ever watched live, and from that point I was just absolutely hooked. I immediately fell in love with it. I was probably 14 or so at the time. Yeah, so I mean, I was really gung-ho about it. The only thing I could find online to do it was this thing called the U.S. Sumo Open. You know, it had a website and everything, but it's all the way out in Los Angeles, California, you know, and being, at the time when I first discovered it, I was living up in Dayton, Ohio. So, you know, that's a pretty big trip. And, you know, being from a single family household and didn't have that much money, you know, we weren't spending all that money to go on a whim, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
As my mom thought at the time, it was just a whim, this like of sumo. So about 4 years later, when I start actually working and I finally get a job, I save up money and I end up taking me, my mom, and my grandparents out to L.A. to the 18th annual U.S. Sumo Open. And I think a lot of my family, because I have social anxiety, thought I was going to chicken out of it, you know, being half naked in front of a couple thousand people. You know, I think they really thought I was going to get there and just, but no, I put my mawashi on, I got up there, and I actually did pretty well. I think I got to the quarterfinals, and I ended up losing to a guy named Sergey, who now is a pro wrestler known as Shishi. So,
now, was that the first time you had ever stepped in a ring?
The U.S. Open has an open mat, like, for 2 days prior to the tournament. So, basically, 2 days before the tournament was the first time I had ever wrestled anyone.
Yeah. And who was the first person you wrestled?
First guy I ever wrestled was Daniel Avila. And, you know, he's a great guy, semi-finalist from the year prior. He trains out in the L.A. club. You know, so that was the first guy I ever wrestled. And so there were three new heavyweights at the time. So there was me, a guy named Marky Nass, and then a guy named Nicholas Rallian. So we all ended up doing like a brief little intro into sumo with Andrew, you know, just trying to get our feet wet and know the entrance and everything to it. So after that, I got a lot more support from my family because they knew I was actually serious about it. This was something I really had to enjoy if I got up there front of 3,000-4,000 people, you know, to wrestle in my skinnies. So I basically was training solo for about 2 years. I was going to every tournament I could just to get, you know, wrestling experience, just to get contact with somebody and really train. And so that was really my beginning into sumo, you know. So I've always, since I was 14, you know, I've always had this love for it and a passion for it, and it just keeps getting stronger every time I go out and train or anything to talk about it, you know.
So you really, I mean, it was something that you just sort of immediately latched onto, and your family's been supportive through this?
Yeah, they have since I went out to L.A., you know, again, with the Western stereotype of it, you know, and how I was with social anxiety, you know, they just thought, it's just something, he's not going to do anything with it. So when I did it, you know, they were really excited, because I don't really get into, like, really in-depth into things, especially things where I have to go out and be social with people.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So they were ecstatic, and, you know, from that point, I've had pretty much their full support going out and doing that.
So. Yeah, that's great. So you were doing this all by yourself. You and I, unbeknownst to each other, were living, like, a little over an hour from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a place where I was kind of wanting to get back into the sport. You know, I'll be 30 this year, and so basically, I was talking to my wife, and I was like, you know, if I'm going to do anything with sumo or anything athletic, like, I better do something now while I'm still young and can still kind of get in there and do stuff, you know, instead of waiting, you know, and it never happening. So I was like, I'm going to see if there's anybody, you know, that would want a sumo. So I ordered a Mawashi. Prior to ordering my Mawashi, I had always made them myself, just out of some, like, heavy cotton, you know, and I would buy it Joann's fabric or whatever and just, like, you know, get however many yards of it, fold it, and put it on. Anyway, I ordered my first, like, real one, and I was like, all right, I've got my Mawashi, and, like, I'm gonna try to do this. And I posted on one of the sumo groups on Facebook, and Robert from Big Sumo Fan, unbeknownst to me also, lives in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Robert knew about Darius, and he basically was like, he saw my post, and he was like, you should get a hold of Darius Campbell. He's, you know, a heavyweight wrestler in the U.S. Sumo Federation. And so, I pretty much, we were in contact by that afternoon, and
I had only met Robert probably a few weeks prior to that.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really just a great timing on that. You know, so he was in a sumo group on Facebook I wasn't in, and he was like, hey, this guy, he's saying he wants anyone in the Cincinnati area, and I was like, oh, bet.
yeah. So it was probably like a real relief to you to like oh, finally, like, somebody. And it kind of was, you know, maybe not in the same way for me, because I didn't, you know, I hadn't been training by myself for two years like you had. But yeah, we sort of came together. We had our first practice, just the two of us, in, well, it wasn't just the two of us. It was just us the first time, and then I think the second.
No, the first time.
Oh, that, Sam. Yeah, the first time we had I brought my friend Sam, and there was another guy named Lee, and we just kind of, like, had our first little, Lee and Sam don't come now, but that was, like, our first little, you know, practice, and you know, it was great, and Darius had already had kind of the. He'd already had his club name in mind and, like, had already made, like, a Facebook page for it and, you know, was kind of doing all those things ahead of time. And then it just ended up. So now to add, you know, to add me in there. And so we really kind of hit the ground running.
Yeah, we grew with the weeds, man.
That was in September. And by, you know, by December when we had the. We had a camp, the Sin City Sumo Camp, with Cornelius. You know, we already had, like, four guys in the club. You know, which it's pretty great. You know, it's hard. Sumo is a hard sell to a lot of people,
yeah.
And I think there's two reasons for that: the attire that you have to wear in sumo, and the misconceptions about what sumo is, and, like, the weight, you know, it's just fat guys, and, like, you know, every time I tell somebody that I'm a sumo wrestler, I get this, like, blank expression of disbelief, you know, and then followed by, you're a little small, aren't you, you know, or whatever, and it's just it's a misconception, and it's just very, it plagues the sport, because
at the very least on the amateur scene.
Yeah, on the amateur scene. On the amateur scene, because it, you know,
we have weight classes in amateur.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily open weight like it is in pros.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so it you know, it's just hard to recruit guys because they have a, you know, they have this thing in mind of like, oh, well, sumo is this way or whatever it is, you know, and but I've yet to have a person try sumo that didn't walk away having at least a respect for it, if not like, I want to do this again, you know. You know, it's really a great sport, and it's a great family sport. You know, it's something you could like get your kids involved in, which is something we really hope to foster at Ohio Sumo, is to try to eventually have some kind of a youth sumo program as part of our you know, overall sumo plan. So yeah, that's where we're at. Our hopes and dreams for it are, I think, eventually maybe to even have like a permanent spot that's, you know, currently right now we practice, like, in the summertime we practice outdoors at my house here in Kentucky, northern Kentucky. In the wintertime, this past winter, we'd been practicing in Lexington at one of our members' gyms, Tony.
Four Seasons MMA.
Yeah, Four Seasons MMA. We practiced there. And so it's been, you know, it's trying to find a place to do it. You know, I mean, in the summertime.
That could be a tough sale, too.
To show up at a gym and be like, we want to sumo wrestle. And they're like, eh. Like, some places won't even let you wear the Mawashi traditional style. You know, they think it's too risque. So, luckily, Four Seasons, you know, they don't care. I think we hope to, you know, obviously we hope to keep growing and, you know, do what we can for the sport. We've really been trying to, in terms of getting people into sumo, this is one thing that Ed, the current president, has just launched in the past couple of months, a thing on the U.S. Sumo website called Starting Sumo,
yeah.
And it's basically a resource page for anybody that's wanting to start sumo. So it. Darius is actually in the U.S. Yeah, Darius is actually one of the contacts for that, and I think it could be a real grassroots thing. You know, it seems to be really working so far. I mean, we get inquiries about sumo quite a bit, really, in the grand scheme of things. I mean, it's not like every day, but you know, there's definitely people seeing it and seeing it in a different light, I think, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of people I talk to, they're like, there's sumo in the U.S.? Like, yeah, there's
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of sumo in the U.S., yeah.
So, and, I mean, sumo just has, a lot of people don't know that sumo has such a ingrained tradition here in the U.S. You know, we're the first country to produce foreign-born pro wrestlers.
Yeah.
When we had the influx of Japanese immigrants in the early 19th century.
Early 20th century.
You know, we started to get a lot of sumo on the West Coast and in Hawaii. And, you know, that culture is still there, especially in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
There's photographs from Portland, Oregon of, like, you know, Japanese guys wrestling in, like, the 19-teens and 20s, you know. So, yeah, it's very much part of our culture, you know, here in little pockets, and I think that that's something that can be to our advantage when it comes to promoting the sport, you know, as well, and then letting people know that we have such great American wrestlers to look up to, you know, Akebono, Musashi Maru, you know, these guys were American Hawaiians who
dominated
in the 90s.
Both Dai Yokozuna, you know, 10 yeah. plus Yusho or
yeah.
championships.
Yeah, yeah. Konishiki, and then you know, one of my personal favorites, you know, Jesse, who was the first foreign-born
champion
person to win a Yusho. So we have a rich, you know, very rich heritage, and there's quite a few other American wrestlers that maybe, you know, weren't quite as successful, but they, you know, made it to the top division and whatnot. So there's a lot of history. A lot of history and a lot of stuff to be proud of as Americans in our sumo, for our sumo prowess. So I guess that's probably a good point to wrap the conversation there, and we're going to move on to our next segment, the last segment, and we're going to talk some pro sumo, which Darius is probably one of the most knowledgeable people in the United States on pro sumo, so you're going to enjoy the conversation. All right, pro sumo. So we started out the year in January. Everything looking pretty promising, pretty great. We started out with the Hatsu Basho in Tokyo, and what a wild one.
Yeah, it was a very exciting tournament. So early on, we get the Yokozuna, Hakuho and Kakuru pulling out. So with those dominant forces out, it really opened the field wide open.
You got the
rest of these guys.
Yeah, you got all kinds of injuries at the top. Goedo, Takayasu, you know, Tochinoshin, the former Ozeki, he's fallen down to Magashira 6 at that point. Not really looking very good at all. You got a couple guys at the top, you know, Hokuto Fuji, you know, was wrestling strong. And then, of course, Asanoyama, really the biggest threats in the top part of the Banzuke at that moment. And then Takakesho, but he was even a little up in the air, too, because he'd been, you know, he'd just come back
from a knee injury.
So it was wide open, and we didn't really know. You just kept thinking, like, who's going to get the upper hand? You know, if somebody can pick up some wins and kind of give themselves a cushion.
Some momentum as well.
Yeah. And even wrestlers like Endo, you just never know. Like, you never know which Endo is going to show up. Mm-hmm. It was pretty wide open. And so out of the field, in this particular tournament, you ended up having a Magashira 17, which you don't always have.
A
Magashira 17. But right at the bottom, you had on the east, you had Kiribayama, and on the west, you had Tokushoru.
Tell
us what happened.
About midway through the tournament, you really start to see two guys starting to really emerge as your favorites. You got Shodai, who is a upper Magashira ranked wrestler, usually who's usually pretty wishy washy most of the time, but this tournament he came out really strong. And then you have, of course, the Magashira 17 West, so the lowest ranking guy in the entire top division, also pulling away from a lot of people, and that's you know, something you definitely don't see.
Yeah. Pulling away. I mean, he, you know, in the first 2 days, he was 1-1. So you're like, okay, you know, nothing really. But then it's like Tochi Ozan, Terutsu Yoshi. I mean, these guys aren't, you know, guys that you just walk in there and, like, beat. You know, even Kota Shogiku, you know,
former
Ozeki, he's very strong. You know, he's beating them. He's beating Chiyomaru, Oyama, and so you're starting to get to the end of this list, and you're like, he's undefeated, and you know he's beating, you know, these guys aren't in the top division for no reason, you know. So he's beating these guys, and probably like after day 10, you're thinking, what if he does this, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, he started having a head of steam, and so usually when you're down that low, you're kind of facing some of the lower-ranked guys, you know, so you think to a certain extent. It's always just, he just has easy guys. But once you start being in the Yusho race, they're going to start bringing you up and to start facing some of the higher ranked guys. So they on day 14, they end up putting him against the other guy who was in the hunt, Shodai, and he ends up beating Shodai, which was very surprising to me.
Yeah.
Because Shodai is a mainstay at the upper part of the Maegashira. So that was very surprising. And then day 15 against an Ozeki, you know, who wants that Ozeki pride.
Yeah.
To get that win over the lowest ranked guy in the top division.
Yeah.
And that was a very fun match.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It was very back and forth. And he ends up pulling it out, winning it.
And the great thing was that, like, when he won it, you know, as sumo wrestlers are not supposed to, like, break.
Show emotion.
And show emotion, you know. And he was in just complete, you know, I just can't imagine, like, the sort of, like, emotional ecstasy that he was experiencing because,
oh yeah,
you know, at that point, you're a Maegashira 17. It's not even entering into your mind that you're going to win a Yusho. You know, and Tokushoru is on, you know, he's on his way out. You know,
he's getting up there in age.
Yeah, and you know, it was kind of like, it reminded me of like when Kyoka Tenho got his Yusho, which I always had a spot for Kyoka Tenho. I loved his wrestling and just very good, solid guy. And you know, but anyway, when he won, when Tokushoru won, just overwhelmed with emotion, he started crying. They showed, I think, footage of his dad watching elsewhere. His dad couldn't be there for whatever reason, but he was watching, and he broke down, you know, just tears, and it was really, really what we needed, I think, at that moment in sumo. Like, it's just a good story. That always helps. Like, a good story, a good dramatic, you know, kind of come from behind Cinderella story is always a good one. So it was really great and a good way to start the year.
Yeah, I mean, and for newer watchers of the sport, might not know who Tokushoryu is, but he used to be a top division mainstay, I believe, making it as high as Maegashira 4. So he had been in the top division, but never really had any spectacular results. So him coming in at an older age, and taking it at the last spot is something that I don't even think he would have thought of.
Oh no, yeah, probably not. Now there was also some talk about when the last time a wrestler from that low won a Yusho. I heard something about like 2001, but I don't think that's right.
So you have a couple guys who are very low in the teens who win them, but to get a guy who is the very last ranking on the top division Banzuke, you have to go all the way back to, I believe, the 30s,
yeah,
to Dewa Minito, who won it at Maegashira 17 West as well.
Okay.
You know, so you're talking about, you know, what is that, 80?
Yeah, that's a long time,
yeah,
you know, for there to not be somebody that low to win it, you know, because, I mean, it's pretty much every year or every tournament, you know, it's Yokozuna, Ozeki. Those are the people that are winning tournaments. Like, those are the people you're going to put money on if you're betting, you know, about who's going to win it. I mean, occasionally you'll get a Sekiwake or Komusubi or even upper Maegashira guy who will win. And that's been happening more as Hakuho,
his dominance is starting to wane.
Yeah, his dominance is starting to wane. You're seeing some of these other guys win Yusho. So, and that's honestly, like, that's a kind of exciting to see. Like, as much as I love, like, Hakuho's career and just what he's been able to accomplish, greatest sumo wrestler I think we'll ever see, just in terms of his numbers and in terms of his just dominance, like tournament after tournament after tournament.
I mean, you go into every basho he's in thinking he's going to win it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I feel bad for like sumo fans after Hakuho because it, like, they're not going to know. I think it's going to open up the sport, though, because I think it's going to, like, make it more, we won't know who's going to win. Because, you know, somebody that dominant won't be at the top. Maybe there will be, but I think it'll be nice for a change to kind of, it's like when your team wins all the time. After a while, like, winning starts to, you become kind of callous to it. And when you see one guy sort of dominate time and time and time again for, like, the last 10 years, you're kind of like, okay, I'm ready for somebody else to win, you know?
Yeah, I kind of compare it to a Michael Jordan or a Tom Brady. They're just dominant, and they're dominant for so long that,
yeah,
you know, you kind of get numb to them winning because you just expect that.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it'll be good, you know, once we, you know, which kind of leads into our next part. So we're going to talk about they canceled the tournament.
Yeah.
With the coronavirus, they went ahead and they had the May tournament,
the
March tournament, because you know, we didn't quite have all the information about the coronavirus, I think, at that point, and they decided to kind of go ahead, but they didn't allow anybody into the arena.
No spectators.
Yeah, no spectators, which was very,
very weird.
Weird, yeah, it was very weird to watch. But also, in another way, it was kind of cool to watch because you got to hear a lot of things that you wouldn't normally hear if there's a crowd yelling. So a lot of little details in the ring that were interesting to hear for the first time. Very odd. Who took the Yusho in the...
I think it was Hakuho.
So Hakuho wins. You know, it was just a strange tournament overall. Like, I think it was just odd to, like, see things that way for the first time. So then they canceled the May tournament.
The Natsubasho.
And we haven't really heard any word on the July tournament.
Yeah, so I think they're just going to, the Sumo Kyokai, the Sumo Association, they're just going to feel it out, see how June runs. They've also canceled the Jungyo, or the regional tours as well, so they're not doing any of those things, which they do usually in between every tournament.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're trying to limit all interaction between wrestlers, and I think they just started getting back into truly training at some of those stables, getting contact training.
Yeah.
So we'll see in the coming weeks.
And there was a wrestler who did succumb to the coronavirus,
right,
and pass away, and his stable master has it as well. Now, are they the only two that were infected, or has there been more infections?
I think there are a couple more even in that stable.
Okay.
But yeah, so I mean, people are getting it, and you know, you're just living in those tight quarters with, you know, in the case of a Kaisebe, you know, 40 other guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's tight quarters, you know. So, and then, as well, just because of the tradition of sumo, I don't think they were, they probably weren't taking as many precautions as we saw some of the other sports, starting to do.
Oh yeah. So it's definitely been odd not to kind of have sumo in our lives the past couple of months, and you know, it's been hard not to have the tournaments because, you know, we those of us who are not just practitioners of the sport, but we are fans of the pros, you know, it's a big part of our year, every odd month when we get to watch our heroes in the ring. So it's been hard, but we've been, you know, pushing through. What did I see? Something, there was something about like a mock tournament that they were doing, or something. Did I see something like it? I don't know what this was, but I saw it was like on Tachi Eye blog or something. It was like a mock, I don't know if it was like a simulation or something they were doing, or but I don't know. I don't know. I don't have enough information on that. Probably shouldn't have brought it up. But at any rate, last topic, Hakuho and his retirement. What he had said was, if everything hadn't happened the way that it did, what he had initially said was he was waiting until the Olympics, which are going to be in Japan, and the reason he wanted to be there in kind of his full sumo glory is because his father had won a medal in wrestling at the Olympics in Japan.
In Tokyo, the in Tokyo Olympics.
Yeah, the Tokyo Olympics.
In 1960, I believe it was, when it was held. So his dad is kind of a national hero in Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
He won a silver medal in his weight class for wrestling. And he was one of the first Mongolians to win a medal at the Olympics. You know, so he was held in very, very high esteem back home. And Hakuho, of course, held him up as a hero, so to speak.
Yeah.
You've been talking about him sitting on becoming a Japanese citizen until after his father passed away, simply because he didn't want to disrespect his father's legacy.
Oh yeah,
or what have you. So he was a very big influence in Hakuho's life, and so a lot of us in the sumo community are thinking that he really just wanted to wait until the Tokyo Olympics. But now, since the Tokyo Olympics have been pushed back, I think he's going to end up just holding off until they're held in 2021.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for the last couple of years, I think you're starting to see definitely a waning of his dominance. You're seeing him pull out of tournaments more often.
Yeah.
And when he's in them, he isn't quite as dominant as we're used to seeing. He's still winning tournaments.
Oh, yeah.
But he's just not as dominant.
Yeah. Even wounded, he's the most dangerous wrestler in the ring. Like, he can pull. I've never seen somebody be able to recover as quick as he often did when something was going, you know, awry, and like he could just pull it out of his back pocket, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna lose, oh, I won. You know, like you know, his balance, I've never seen somebody so balanced, could stay on their feet. But he you do start to notice like he's nursing some injuries that have been nagging him for quite some time. I know his arm, his like upper bicep, and so yeah, you just, you know, I think he will be a wrestler that will go out with his boots on in every way, you know, possible. I think he's earned, you know, I think he'll go out of sumo on his terms, which is usually not, it's usually not always what happens, you know. Wrestlers either get hurt, or the sumo association says, okay, now's, you know, it's time to retire or whatever. But I think he will be one that he's the Babe Ruth of you know, of sumo. You know, when you think about the greats, you know, the Michael Jordans, the Babe Ruths. You know, when you think of a sport and a name comes to mind, he will be that guy for sumo, I think.
Especially for our generation.
And for generations to come, you know. I think the older Japanese citizens would probably talk about guys like Taiho and you know, those would be kind of their
Chino Fuji.
They're, you know, they'd probably say greatest of all time, but
Futabayama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's actually the only record that Hakuho doesn't hold, is most consecutive wins, which is by Futabayama.
Yeah.
So, I mean, every other record of note, Hakuho holds it.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really amazing. Yeah, well,
let's finish off with some good news.
Some good news.
So, Asanoyama got promoted to Ozeki.
Oh, he did.
He did.
Yes. Excellent. So, Asa has kind of become, Both Darius and I's wrestlers who we were fans of both became Yokozuna, mine being Harma Fuji, his being Kasena Sato. They're both gone, and so we've kind of been we both have struggled with finding new guys to root for, I think. And Asa Noyama has really become somebody that we've kind of both become fans of, and so I'm excited to see what he can do. I think he's the best hope for the next Yokozuna.
I mean, out of the field, I think he has the best chance.
Yeah, you can see when he wrestles, like all the tools are, like all the pieces are there. He's just got to like put them together.
And just get some more experience under his belt. You know, yeah. He hasn't been in the sport. I mean, he hasn't been in the pro ranks that long because he came out of college.
Yeah.
So he's only been in for a couple years now, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's rose tremendously in that time. So we all have great hopes for him and hope that when he finally does do his Ozeki debut, that he has a good tournament and gets his Ozeki Kakudekoshi.
Yeah.
Of 10 wins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll be awesome. Thank you for listening to the Ohio Sumo Podcast. Hopefully in the future, this is going to be the place where you can hear about American sumo, what's going on in some pro sumo, and then, general interviews with wrestlers. And we hope to cover American wrestlers. We hope to cover former pro wrestlers. So this is Darius and Jake signing off. Thanks for listening.
Arigatou gozaimasu.